Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Supreme Court justices hear the challenge to Governor Tony Evers' extension of his Safer at Home order. One justice compares it to World War II Japanese internment camps. The governor says every nursing home resident and staff member will be tested for COVID-19 by the end of the month. April tax collections fall by $870 million, a 43% drop from the same month last year. The UW system president warns that cuts in programs and layoffs must occur by fall 2021. Busy week. Rewind, your week in review for May 8.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
The most drama in the Capitol this week was the Supreme Court justices hearing the challenge filed by Republican leaders to the extension of the Safer at Home order by Governor Evers and his Secretary of Health Services, Andrea Palm. Now, we're going to hear about 3 minutes of those oral arguments back and forth, but I just want to set the framework, and then I'll give JR a chance to elaborate before we actually hear some segments of the argument. So, first of all, as I said, the Republican legislative leader sued. They asked that DHS draft a rule, not a statewide order, that Governor Evers issued. They heard this challenge to the authority of DHS Secretary Palm in a virtual hearing. Three of the justices, as you'll see in a moment, Ziegler, Kelly, and Grassl Bradley, seem to be critical of the giving a DHS secretary a right to create a new law. Point three, point four, defending the governor's order. Colin Roth, an assistant attorney general, said, like it or not, the law gives the governor broad authority to act in pandemics like this. JR, what have I missed before we actually hear some of the arguments?
In talking to people since watching the arguments, there seemed to be a general consensus that there are a couple of camps among the justices, right? So Rebecca Bradley and Daniel Kelly, they hinted at they have a constitutional concern about the statute in general, which gives the DHS secretary these broad powers to issue orders in a health pandemic. Then you have Annette Ziegler and Pat Rogensack, who's the Chief Justice. They seem like to be in a camp of, well, should this have been done as an emergency rule, not as an order? Not quite as far reaching as maybe what Bradley and Kelly want to do. Brian Hagedorn, the fifth conservative on the court, he's a wild card. Don't forget, he was a chief legal counsel to then Governor Scott Walker. He knows the emergency rule process. He understands kind of the powers governors like to have and things like this. So he may be a little bit more of a wild card. Then you have liberal justices, Ann Walsh Bradley and Rebecca Dallet. They seem to be more on the plane of defending the governor's order. So now the question is, how is this decision going to look when it comes out? Now, I often hesitate to predict what judges are going to do, but it seemed pretty clear there are at least four justices on that court who do not like what happened. The question is, what will the decision look like? Now, let me play kind of a parlor game lawyer for you, okay? When the court issues a ruling in any case, they figure out who's where, then they draw basically straws who's going to write the decision. If there's a decision written by an Annette Ziegler or a Pat Rogensack, you can bet that a Rebecca Bradley and Daniel Kelly will have a concurring opinion, which will likely say, okay, I'm okay with this piece, but I want to go farther because I want to have this law thrown out, period. If it's written by a Bradley or a Kelly, then what do Ziegler and Rogensack do? Do they embrace how far those two might want to go? What I'm getting at is you could have a scenario where you have multiple decisions issued by this court and people like you and I have to wait through and go, okay, what's it mean? What is the bottom line? And my nightmare is a 5:30 on Friday decision or I've got three or four opinions from me going, okay, I got to piece together what this actually means in practice for this order. And I'm not going to predict anything, but I'm bracing you for the scenario of it's not going to be a clean 5-2 or 4-3 ruling that we see from the court. End of story.
Which is why you're on your laptop in real time looking for this decision at any moment. Okay, time to hear about 3 minutes worth of the very interesting back and forth between the justices and the lawyer for the GOP leaders and the lawyer for the Department of Justice, please.
Where in the Constitution did the people of Wisconsin confer authority on a single unelected cabinet secretary to compel almost 6 million people to stay at home and close their businesses and face imprisonment if they don't comply with no input from the legislature, without the consent of the people? Isn't it the very definition of tyranny?
The Constitution provides that the legislature may enact statutes to protect the public health. And that is exactly what the legislature has done in Chapter 25202, sub 3, 4, and 6. So I think that expression of legislative intent that grants DHS the power to do whatever is necessary to combat a novel, deadly, communicable disease like the one we're facing today is where we find that consent.
Then the secretary, all by herself, created a criminal law. The fact that it is punishable by criminal violation simply highlights the fact that she's creating new standards that did not exist before. If these are not new standards, if this is not a new law, then there should be no problem with the criminal sanctions.
I mean, you haven't given any parameters other than to say because it applies to the whole state, it's the line isn't there.
There are irreparable harms on the other side here. Every day that DHS in this administration proceeds as though they are not subject to 227, we are irreparably harmed as the entity that created DHS and gave it its powers in the first place. The public is also harmed because they get no input through an elected official other than the governor. It just can't be that DHS has more authority even than the governor himself.
I'll direct your attention to another time in history in the Korematsu decision where the court said the need for action was great and time was short, and that justified, and I'm quoting, assembling together and placing under guard all those of Japanese ancestry in assembly centers during World War II. Could the secretary, under this broad delegation of legislative power or legislative-like power, order people out of their homes into centers where they are properly socially distanced in order to combat the pandemic?
You take the statutory text as it is, and the statutory text empowers DHS to take all necessary action to combat communicable diseases. I understand Your Honor may be uncomfortable with that broad grant of authority in the sense that you think it may allow DHS to go too far. I humbly submit to you that that concern is best addressed to the legislature and asking them to amend the statute that they passed.
I asked if this court, because of the lawsuit brought by the Wisconsin legislature, would invalidate 28 and leave nothing in its place, kind of flip the switch, so to speak. What kind of ramifications or chaos would result? Your opposing counsel said, well, then the politicians would have to come together. But what kind of real logistics, health, and lives are implicated if that's what this court would do upon the invitation of the Wisconsin legislature bringing this suit?
The disease will spread like wildfire. People will die if this order is enjoined with nothing to replace it. The COVID-19 virus is a wildfire that's spreading across the state, and DHS is the fire department that the legislature has empowered to fight that fire.
I found that a very fascinating exchange, JR. Now, as we keep saying, we're not lawyers, but just really, really, really quickly, what could the court order? It could narrowly find that we don't like it, but the legislature did give the DHS secretary that broad authority, or it could say, no, we're striking down the extension and give the governor and legislators 6, 10, 12 days to come up with a rule. Any other options, fellow non-lawyer?
The court could strike down the statute, period.
Yes.
They could also strike down the order and not give any time. Rebecca Bradley said at one point to the legislature's attorney, well, if it's an unconstitutional order, why should we give you any time with this? Why should we strike it down immediately? Now, the time period, originally Republicans asked for an injunction to prevent enforcement of the order, but a six-day stay. And they followed brief last week and said, well, we'll leave it to your discretion on when you might want to issue such or how long a stay should last.
Right.
That was seen as a nod to Brian Hagedorn again because he knows this process intimately.
Yes.
Several other arguments. Ryan Walsh, the attorney for lawmakers, said, well, we think it could take about 12 days to get a new order in place, a new rule in place. So that gives some time windows for either like immediately strike it down to maybe 12 days, maybe longer. And oh, by the way, this in a way is kind of good for Evers because it runs out the clock. Start doing some math from, let's say, a decision on Monday. 12 days from Monday is awfully close to May 26th.
May 26th. That's right.
So it's not the worst thing for him in the world. That does, okay, though, impact if he wants to do another order that has other restrictions, but not as far as the stay-at-home one does.
Okay, and that's a very good point, but we got a lot to cover. We got to move on. There was also a second challenge to the Safer at Home extension filed, and that's purely on constitutional grounds. You have the lawsuit was filed by a Waukesha County conservative, Jerry Fabrick, and a Walworth County resident, Larry Chapman. It alleges that extending Safer at Home violated their constitutional rights, number one, to religious liberty, because Mr. Chapman said he couldn't go to his Baptist church in Pewaukee, and amounted to modified house arrest, which violates rights of freedom of speech and assembly. And Mr. Fabrick said it violated his right to travel because he felt, given Safer at Home, he could not go to the reopened Capitol protest on April 24th. Now, here's my question, JR. The court has ordered the Governor Evers and the sheriffs that were sued by Chapman and Fabrick until 4 p.m. day to file a response, and then the plaintiffs can file their response early next week. Is it possible that the Supreme Court could join both of these legal challenges?
Lots of things possible. It could join the challenges. They could find, if the court strikes down the order, it could rule the lawsuit is moot because the order's not in place anymore. There are all kinds of options here for the court. Again, I try to predict what they're going to do, but if the order is struck down and no longer in place, you might not have to get into the constitutional issues that are being raised in this lawsuit.
Okay.
Rebecca Bradley, I asked people about this case. She wants a case like this to get into those powers and where they conflict with the First Amendment.
Okay, good point. Okay, let's do some updating on the COVID virus. First of all, Governor Evers last week made a pretty dramatic promise. He wants every nursing home resident, and he said we have 373 nursing homes. I didn't know that. He wants every nursing home resident and staffer tested by the end of this month. There, we heard today that 15 National Guard units, and by the way, the press release from the Department of Military Affairs said there's now 1,400 Guard units mobilized dealing with a response to COVID-19. And we're increasing our lab testing capacity. The Secretary of DHS said today 51 labs are now available, and we can test 14,000 cases a day. And Governor Evers said we're going to begin Madison and Milwaukee community testing. The interesting, the numbers just released, there are 9,590 positives, which is a one-day increase of 375, and the number of COVID-related deaths is 384, and I just want to say 219 of those COVID-related deaths are in Milwaukee County, and followed by Dane and Waukesha County with 22, which means that 68% of all COVID-related deaths are in just those three counties. Now, where I want to get JR involved is the Republicans held regional press conferences asking for a region-by-region reopening, and Speaker Voss went on Wisconsin Health News to we're going to hear that in a minute. So, JR, pressure building for regional approaches?
That's what Republicans have been asking for. What we haven't seen from Republicans is an actual, this is the GOP legislative plan for Wisconsin. We've seen Reps Cody Harlocker from a while ago put out kind of a proposal that he and I think 18 of his colleagues signed on to. We have the WMC, Wisconsin Manufacturers of Commerce. We have that group's plan, but we don't have this is a outline from start to finish from Republican leaders about what they want to do. So that's what they were watching for. If this order is thrown out by the court, what do Republican lawmakers want? We know they want regionalization, but what would that look like, and how do you find those regions?
Okay, and this is a great time to hear from Speaker Voss in his interview with Tim Stumm of Wisconsin Health News. Please.
From my perspective, there should not be a Democrat plan and a Republican plan to fight the virus. There should be a Wisconsin plan where every single person has the ability to come together, understand that perhaps it's not everything that they wanted or everything that they think should happen, but it certainly is something that the whole state can buy into. On my call with Governor Evers tonight, I brought up the fact that, look, I pray for him daily. I think he has a really hard job. I think he is doing the best that he possibly can, but he is getting one set of input primarily from those on his staff and the people that he chooses to reach out to. Legislators are getting different input because we are still out in the community where we can. We're doing constituent calls from people who are angry because the order is too strong and angry because the order isn't strong enough. I think this is one of those examples where we're going to have to find a way to get it done. I have given my word to my caucus and my constituents that I'm going to work night and day to try to find an answer. We sent that letter last week. Luckily, Governor Evers was able to finally respond. So we had a good initial discussion on Monday. I'm hoping we have more of those this week because I don't think we have to wait for the court case to start working together. And hopefully he takes us up on those offers.
I want to stay with this, JR, because just before we tape this, the governor's office, in a statement, issued some, quote, guidelines. And the governor at that DHS event today said guidelines three times. And he said, when we achieve the Badger bounce back metrics, six or four, whatever, these are general guidelines. And I'm just really intrigued what your impression of them. Let's go through them quickly. Businesses should make sure employees who are sick stay home, ensure workers have access to sanitizers, not travel as much, personal protection. But then, as you pointed out in your advisory, at WisPolitics Advisory, he gave specific reference to when business reopened. Number one, bars should leave two stools empty between customers. Companies, how vague is that? Should consider suspending coffee service. That's not a real detailed plan to reopen. Gyms should keep basketball courts and other areas where physical contact sports occur closed. And movie theaters, two seats in between patrons at movies. So, JR, what is he doing? He's saying we have to meet Badger bounce back basics, and then once we do, these will be the guidelines. Help parse that for me.
So generally speaking, for everybody, he's talking about, you know, maintaining social distancing, personal protection equipment if needed, you know, washing your hands, all these for everybody. But if you go through the documents in each of these that are posted, there are industry specific guidelines, suggestions of, okay, for example, with the coffee stuff, like, is it in the manufacturing section? Like, this is, I mean, there are all kinds of proposals, but it's giving you some of the level of detail of, like, okay, you should think about if you have a general coffee service, people are congregating, they are grabbing the same pot, you know, they're, it's just kind of a warning of, okay, we are, like you said, the news conference, there is not going to be a regular old normal when we go back to normal. Right. There are going to be still be requirements of social distancing, of thinking about not doing what you used to do because this virus is still there and there's not a vaccine yet.
Okay, but is this assigned to the Republicans and the very angry people who want Wisconsin reopened, that the governor is actually thinking about what steps will be taken to reopen once we hit the metrics?
Well, possibly. I mean, there was a perception even when he issued the second, well, when his administration issued the second order extending to May 26th, that he would turn the dial, use his words, before May 26th. It would give people a feeling of, okay, he said May 26th, but I'm getting to do X on May 15th. It would make you feel like, okay, there's light in the tunnel to see changes happening. So there's a perception that maybe some of the stuff is greasing the skids for what's going to come next, and that dial's starting to turn, and starting to feel like a little bit, again, not a return to normal, but a move to the new normal that we're going to have with COVID-19.
Okay, very good point. But it was a very busy week, JR, and in the middle of the week, the Legislative Fiscal Bureau put out a memo saying, we have taken a look, at April tax collections, and they fell $870 million below April 2019 tax collections, which is a 43% drop. The biggest drop, $676 million, was in personal income taxes, but it's very important to note that you and I normally have to pay our personal income taxes on April 15th, and that has been slid along with our federal income tax deadlines to July 15th, which is still within the fiscal year. But the Fiscal Bureau memo also said $2 billion in federal COVID-19 aid from the CARES Act cannot be used to replace this lost revenue. And the statement from Fiscal Bureau Director Bob Lang, first, the coronavirus pandemic has severely impacted the state's economy and tax collections. Second, the extension of income and franchise tax filings from April to July 15th in 2020 has affected collections. I also want to point out Mr. Lange said, look out for May tax collections. Now, before I give you a chance, JR, to jump in, and I'm sorry I've been dominating it, Mr. Lange's memo said the period July 1 through the end of April, our general purpose tax collections are running $313 million less than the previous 10 months window. I'm sorry, JR, your turn.
Just real quick, Lange also said it's going to be hard to get a good handle on what's actually happening until after that July 15th filing deadline.
Yep.
Because April is typically one of our biggest months for collections because the bills come due. By pushing back to July, it's tough to get a handle on things. Also, he laid out several scenarios that may help cushion the blow of what's going on. For example, in January, they projected a big surplus in tax collections. That would result in a $189 million transfer to the rainy day fund. That's likely not going to happen now.
Right.
Governor Evers is ordering a cut in GPR operations budgets for agencies, about $70 million. That also likely helped cushion the blow. Side note, of that $70 million, about $46 million come from the university system, according to those officials at a meeting on Thursday. So there are a couple of things that, also we have the rainy day fund, $655 million. There are several things that may not make that first year as bad as it could be otherwise. The bill comes due in year two, and we won't have a good handle on what's happening really until after July 15th and seeing what the federal parameters are on this federal money, because Lange notes in the memo that there's one, still talk about what that money could be used for, we've already received, and two, maybe more money coming from the feds to help replace lost revenue. So a lot of to be determined there in that picture right now.
Yep, and the news keeps coming. Within hours of that, the Department of Workforce Development put out projections of how our UI, Unemployment Insurance Fund, could be wiped out as early as October, given three possible scenarios. Let's take a quick look at them. If 255,000 payable claims are paid, 255,000 payable claims averaging 355 a week, the fund would now, $1.8 billion fund, I'm sorry I'm going too fast, would be depleted by October 11 of this year. If the number of payable claims dropped to 170,000, that fund would be gone by January 3 of next year. And if the number of payable claims dropped to 85,000 per week, that fund would be gone by September 19th of 2021. And DWD said our 500,000 claims are 194% greater than in the first week of the Great Recession. Fascinating numbers, JR, but we have to point out, as we did in the Great Recession, if our state fund goes bankrupt, we can borrow from the funds, federal government. Your turn.
A couple of things. Remember, when that fund drops the balance, it means a higher tax schedule for businesses. So it's a double whammy of trying to deal with the recession, but also you're getting a higher tax schedule to replenish the fund. Two, remember, we were talking about that we have a one-week suspend. We have a one-week delay under state law between when you file for your unemployment, get your first check. Federal law said if this CARES Act, if you don't have that one-week reporting waiting period, we'll basically pay for it. Republicans and the bill they did back in April suspended through the end of, actually through early February of 2021, that requirement. Didn't do away with it, but suspended it, thinking that they could retroactively get that money. The feds told the state no. Yep. They lost $25 million because you took too long to pass that bill.
Yep.
And so that stresses the fund a little bit more.
Yep. And there was a lot of political finger pointing over that. Okay, but we got so much news we got to move on. Because UW System President Ray Cross issued a very grave warning to the UW system. And he said that given the squeeze caused by the COVID-19 crisis, flat state aid, tuition freezes, fewer high school grads projected, the system faces unprecedented challenge. And he told the Regents yesterday, some of our four-year campuses, his words, may not survive. So what does the outgoing President Cross want? He wants each campus to list duplicated low enrollment classes, other cuts. He wants a specific reworked mission statements, plans for layoffs by January, and he wants the UW system to play a greater role, a centralized role in administration. He is saying some campuses may not make it. Institutions cannot continue to be all things to all people. We've got to act as if our future depends on it because, well, it does. Any PSs, JR, keep knowing that we're running out of time?
Talking about campuses specializing,
Yeah.
Let's like Platteville's got a great engineering program, right?
Yep.
That becomes more of the engineering place to go. Oshkosh becomes a place where teachers want it. I mean, you're seeing a move and what he's envisioning of campuses becoming, I want to major in X. I don't have 12 options anymore. I've got three. Yep. And that's what the vision he has for campuses going forward.
Yep. Okay. Department of Transportation, the Division of Motor Vehicles, has major changes. You and I renew our driver's license. My 16-year-old granddaughter in Waukesha is waiting to get her license. So here are the changes. Number one, let's deal with renewal. New topic. Must be a U.S. citizen with a regular license. Must be 64 or younger with no new medical restrictions. Must not have had any changes to vision since the last renewal. Excuse me. The 16,000 people are waiting for a road test. So with these changes, that should cut that down, should cut it down significantly. What are the changes? You must have an instruction learner's permit for at least 6 months, completed driver's ed classes, completed behind the wheel training with a licensed instructor, have at least 30 hours of driving with a parent or a sponsor who requests a road test waiver. I don't know if my son and daughter-in-law will do that for my 16-year-old. I just find this very interesting. JR, any passes on that?
You know, I went to high school in Indiana. As long as I took a driver's ed class, I'd have to take a road test to get my license. So they passed a written test. So it's not like everybody has to do a road test across country to get a license. This basically says if you've taken a class, you pass that, your parents are okay with it, you're good. This puts more pressure on parents to say, okay, you can get your license now versus, well, got to pass your road test. You know, now it's
okay.
A little more on them.
You've got two boys. How old's how many years away is the oldest?
Older one turns 15 in June, so just a learner's permit first.
Yep, understand. Okay, final subject. Tuesday election, 7th Congressional District. They're going to replace Sean Duffy, who resigned in September of 29, citing family health issues, the condition of his then unborn baby. The Republican candidate is State Senator Tom Tiffany of Hazelhurst or Minocqua, elected to the state Senate in 2012, reelected in 2016, served in the Assembly 2011 and 2012. The Democrat, Trisha Zunker of Wausau is president of the Wausau School Board and Associate Justice of the Ho-Chunk Nation Supreme Court. JR, the Wisconsin Election Commission said 93,000, that's a big correction, 93,000 absentee ballots have been requested. 250 Guard members will be working at the polls. And what do you look for in that?
A couple of things. One, this is a very Trump district. So we're expecting that Tom Tiffany is going to do well there. Likely he's the favorite. If Tiffany doesn't win, or if Zunker does better than expected, that'll be a story nationally because you're talking Trump territory. Zunker's best hope might be that Democrats got a boost April 7th with the numbers that Joe Kurowski did in the state Supreme Court race, winning by 10% statewide.
Okay.
Might then that be a boost for Democrats looking into this race? Also, the mail ballots. Remember the good absentee ballot system. If Democrats are supercharged from April 7th, get a good mail, absentee ballot system going, and have a little bit of luck, maybe Zunker's get some national attention because what happened April 7th actually outraised Tiffany the month of April. But still, it looks like Tiffany is the favorite in this district because of the nature of the district. Overall, money-wise, he's outraised her by quite a bit. And third and finally, just the infrastructure. We see more outside groups helping Tiffany, helping Zunker so far. But all points for him being a bit of a favorite on Tuesday.
Okay, and we're going to close the show with this closing statements from a debate last week between Democrat Trisha Zunker and Republican State Senator Tom Tiffany, Election Tuesday, 7th Congressional District.
Now more than ever, we need someone in office who's going to advocate for affordable health care and economic security for all Wisconsinites. I'm prepared to do that. I'm going to take on Big Pharma and lower the cost of prescription drugs, provide the help that's needed for small businesses and farmers, and funding to expand rural broadband access.
You can count on me. I'm going to secure the border. I'm going to protect life, including the unborn, and I'm going to defend the Second Amendment, your Second Amendment rights to the Constitution. And also, folks, I'm going to hold China accountable for what they unleashed on the world. You have someone in Tom Tiffany who's tested, proven, and I'll bring a good dose of Wisconsin common sense to Washington, D.C.
JR, this is an amazing time to be covering Wisconsin's capital, isn't it?
Yeah, you could say that.
I'm Steve Walters.
I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for May 8th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.